All right, folks, we are back on the flagstick.com T-Talk podcast. Stefan Tiedorf back in studio with my co-host, Scott McLeod. Scotty, great podcast last week. How you doing?
Good. Welcome back, bud. How was the vacation? How was the time away?
Yeah, it was good. I was in Quebec City, which is a lovely place. It was weird being in Quebec City, though. The birthplace of Norm Macdonald, finding out Norm Macdonald passed away. So I've been binging a lot of Norm Macdonald. Norm loved golf. You didn't really talk about Norm last week, did you?
A little bit, but not extensively. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, so that was on my mind a lot. And, you know, some of his last tweets were actually about
his very last tweet was about golf.
Call Morikawa. So, yeah, that was interesting. Oh, it's been awesome. Awesome week. Didn't play golf. Didn't touch the clubs. Kind of showed yesterday when you and I played golf, but that's a whole other conversation. How are you?
Yeah, all good. Actually, it was good to get out yesterday. Haven't had a lot of casual rounds of late, and obviously, a friend of ours, Andy McWilliams from Golf Sim Gurus, joined us, and we had a good time at the Smith Falls Golf and Country Club, the home club of Brooke Henderson. I think a few people might know that, but greens were great and company was good. Wind was a little much, but otherwise, it was fun time.
Yeah, it was golf in the end. Yeah, I'm at this weird stage with golf. I don't know where my relationship's going with golf right now.
It was apparent yesterday.
Yeah, like it's just when you can't practice and then you just play a couple times a week and it's just so frustrating. And then I don't know, got a little tip from you at one point, and then the last couple holes felt fine, but yeah. Whatever it is, what it
and
is.
It's my fault a little bit too, because you said it yesterday. I sort of promised you that, you know, being a father for the first time, you're going to be tired and all these other things are going on. Golf wasn't going to matter as much, and you probably play better.
Yeah, you told me I played great this year, and I played like crap all year. Doubled my handicap, and it's just like, it went down a stroke. No, it's right back. Oh, it's just bad. It's just, yeah, it's so hard. I don't get how people like it. Must be like, and this is a weird transition to, I was reading up on Hunter Mahan. I guess he's doing some announcing for like college golf now or something. I saw it on Golf WRX in a forum, and it's like, it must be so frustrating for a guy like that. That was literally at one point, arguably the best player in the world for a year, year two stretch there, like always winning, always in the mix, you know, on Ryder Cup teams. And now just like, it sounds like he's probably just going to retire based on this podcast that came out, and he just doesn't want to say it. And he just like, because you know, you're trying for 2 years, you don't get anywhere. And like, that's at that level. Like just last couple of years, I just tried to play golf for fun and double, like, you know where you were. And it's like, doesn't matter what I do, I'm not getting back there. It's like, I know I can, but it's just so frustrating.
I think that's one of the great things about golf and one of the bad things about golf. When we're playing well, it feels like it's never going to end. It feels like we've got it. Like we're in total control. You know what? I've reached my potential. This is what I've always chased. This is where I want to be. And then you come out and it's like, man, have I ever touched a golf club before? I think that's the magic. And I think that's what sort of sucks us in and goes, you know what? I've been there. I've got really close to the sun. I think I've even touched it a little bit. Now, what do I do to get back there? And that's the everlasting quest. And that's what makes golf so great.
Yeah, I'm just hoping my kid like gets into golf for the sense of like just going to the range. It's like, maybe I can practice because, hey, he wants to practice. And like that will get to the point where I'll just be a range rat with it. It's a dream. So maybe by 40, I'll be decent at golf again. But at this point, I'm like, I might be a 20 handicap at the rate I'm going.
Well, the other side of it too is that, you know, he could be the one who ends up playing more than you do, which is probably likely more the case in my house these days. But and then sometimes you end up being jealous of them. But whatever the case, I mean, you know what, you get to enjoy the game, and you know, you have great moments, and you know what, you can hit a drive, one drive, as good as anyone else, and that's enough to bring you back.
Yeah, I won $20 on a long drive yesterday.
Oh, so yeah, that's right.
Long
was,
for me.
I was not included. Yeah. I actually
said yes to the drive in the middle of my downswing, I believe. I definitely were. The question came up, $20 for longest drive. And I, as I'm making contact, I think I said yes. So $20, free lunch, Away we go. Let's talk about the week that was. I don't think people care about me and being depressed about my golf game that much. So let's talk about what happened over the last couple weeks here. Some of these stories might trickle in. I listened to most of the podcast last week. So if anything that was covered, you're welcome. If anything was covered, let me know if I'm doubling down on anything here. But what's your birdie for the week? Let's start it off with a positive note here.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch a lot of the Fortinet Championship, and I kept calling it the Fortnite Championship, which a lot of other people were throwing out all sorts of memes and stuff like that. But seeing Max Homa win his third PGA Tour tournament, and that was big. But the biggest thing I think came from that for me was the fact that he just recently made a decision to put a greater focus into his work. He stepped away from doing the podcast with Shane Bacon, and he just said, time management. He said he feels like outside of his family that, things that make him happiest is playing great golf. So, if he's going to spend some time doing some things, he wants to spend more time doing that. And, that led to a few other discussions I had with, some Mackenzie Tour players and talking about, managing your time, especially in a social media era where, fans and people want a little certain something from you, and you have to give them something, because that persona, that public side of it, is important as far as your marketing is concerned. But there's a point where it starts to interfere with what your job is and what your goals are and what you're trying to do. So trying to balance that is super important. And my birdie is to Max himself for realizing that and understanding that. And while it's cool to be super popular roasting people's golf swings on social media, and it certainly grows your audience, and it certainly maybe it gets you a little bit more of that tip money, is that really his goal? His goal is to be a great golfer, a great professional golfer, and a player that's going to win a lot on the PGA Tour. And if he wants to do that, he has to give that the proper amount of focus, not all of his focus. He's still got to balance his life, but the fact that he's decided that, he needs to do that a little bit more. And, I think this will pay off for him. I think, when we look ahead to things like Ryder Cup, which we'll be talking about today in our preview, he wants to be on that team. He wants to be on President's Cup teams. He wants to win majors. He wants to be in WGCs. And, he's not necessarily going to make his game better by spending 5 extra minutes roasting somebody's swing versus putting 5 more minutes into some performance aspect of his game.
Yeah, it's funny that we said that after I just complained about hating my golf game, that he stepped away from his podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Whoops.
Whoops. All right. I'm going to announce my retirement. I love Max Homa. I think he's been great for golf, great for podcasts. I think he'll still do stuff like that. I think one of my favorite podcasts is, if you go back, especially now, maybe it's worth a listen, No Laying Up was one of the first people ever to interview him. Yep. When he was on the Corn Ferry Tour. Yeah. And he was out there, and just a great interview then. And I bet you, if you told him, hey, you're going to have 3 PGA Tour wins in your career, he would have signed off now. And now it's I guess we'll move the goalpost a little further. I think he's great. I think his mustache great. His hair is great. Don't know what has more hair, the top of his head or his arms, but he's awesome. I think he's awesome for the game. I think it's a good call that he's stepping away. I think Shane Bacon's also, he's busy too. He's on the Golf Channel now. And I think they're both exactly where they want to be. When they first started that podcast, I think Shane was trying to get into golf more from a media standpoint, and just wasn't getting the opportunities that I think he should have. And I think he should be actually on broadcast. I think he's one of the best, similar to Colt Knost, all those guys, this new wave coming in. Mm-hmm. And he's doing that. He's seeing his dreams come true in a lot of ways. And Max kind of the same thing with the actual results on the golf course. So I think it's a solid birdie. I didn't really watch much either. I kind of watched the last couple of holes. Didn't really care to watch that tournament. The field was horrific. You and I were going back and forth. We were looking at names. How the hell did this guy get in?
Yeah, exactly.
There's so many names that I feel like for weeks, we're talking about, this guy, he's at a crossroads in his career. What's going to happen here? Yeah. Nope. In the next tournament. Oh, this guy lost his tour card. What's going to happen with him going forward? He's going back to Q school. No, he's in the PGA Tour event. No one was in the field. In fact, I do not get why John Rahm played in this tournament either. There's so many people in that tournament. It's just an awful field. And the golf course, I'm going to give just a quick bogey to me, because I always chirp, golf courses don't need to be green, right? And I say that all the time. I saw this course, like, what is going on here? This place looks like a muni. And I actually messaged a caddy that was in the field, like, what's happening out there? That it, like, it does not look good. It looks like crap. And he said, you know, don't let TV kid you. This is a great golf course. It's a great layout. They're just all the wildfires and everything that's going on in California. They couldn't get enough water to actually keep it in that like pristine condition. And I was like, why did I even care about that in the first place? Like,
Well, you know, that's the thing though. That's why it's important to always get the rest of the story. And I think that's the thing that happens all the time. We're all guilty of it. And especially now in an era when social media is, you know, so much sound bites and things like that, that we make a judgment quickly and we make a decision based on something. And maybe we haven't got the whole rest of the story. So yeah, obviously anybody that's on site is going to see that. And you found out what the deal was.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the rest of the story, For years, we had these theories that Imbie Park was one of the best putters in the world.
Right.
Best putters of all time, potentially. It was just a theory because the LPGA never kept these advanced statistics like the PGA Tour. Well, now they're finally doing it. And I'm giving a birdie to that. But also just Imbie Park in the first place is getting a birdie for. And I might have an argument here that she might be the best putter of all time. And these stats are starting to come out. You're going to see more of it, and they're going to start, you know, tracking their shots gained and everything like that on the LPGA, which thank God they're going to start doing that. But this comes from a Golf Digest article about they've started these stats. I think KPMG is.
Yeah, it's the KPMG Performance Insights. And Justin Ray, who a lot of people will be familiar with on Twitter, did a lot of work for Golf Channel and then 15th Club. He's the guy doing a lot of contribution based on these insights to a lot of other media outlets. And he's a fantastic follow on Twitter if anybody wants to give him a follow.
Yeah. So in that article, he says, when it comes to 10 to 15 foot putts, Imbie Park is pretty damn close to making everything. He compares that to the PGA Tour from 10 to 15 feet. You're looking at an average of around 30%. The best player last year on the PGA Tour was a guy I've never even heard of in that range. Rain Gibson made them at 41%.
Mr. 55. He shot 55 on the mini tour, Australia.
Rain Gibson. Bryson just behind him at around like a 38%, if I'm not mistaken, in third. But Imbie Park is almost doubling these guys. She's making it
crazy
tough math, but with Rain, but she's making it 64% of the time. That's better than what the PGA Tour players do at 5 to 10 feet. Now people are going to say, well, the greens, blah, 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 blah. Like, and the idiots that, you know, compare men's and women's golf. I don't care what greens they're on.
Yeah.
You know, that percentage is it's going to be,
yeah, I mean, I will say and temper this a little bit that they have a small group of statistics now at this point. They haven't recorded a lot for the LPGA Tour,
of course,
but obviously it is going to play out and show exactly that Imbie Park is, you know, fantastic as far as putting. And I can still, like, in my mind, I can remember seeing her play for the first time. She was going down the first hole at the Ottawa Hunt Club in 2008 at the CP Women's Open in these bright yellow pants. And I'm watching this slow backswing and I'm like, I'm going to follow this player. And I followed her for a few holes that day or whatever. And, you know, right away you could see, you know, she had some special talents, never imagining what was going to happen. I mean, if anybody had predicted, you know, what she was going to do in golf, I mean,
you would have quit your job and asked.
Exactly. They're kidding themselves, but you could tell that there was something there. And, you know, I think it's great. And it's a fantastic birdie because, you know what, we've needed these stats for a long time. And it's not just for us from a spectator standpoint, it's for coaches' standpoints and for the player standpoints as well. I mean, the fact is, I mean, if you're looking at statistics, which are really flawed, like, you know, things like greens and regulation, well, they only tell you so much. Proximity to the hole is obviously better than that. Total putts per round. I mean, very primitive statistics that they've had for the LPGA Tour, which has not been good for the players in order for them to diagnose their play and to really drill down where they need to improve. So I have to imagine that, you know, not only are spectators going to like this, TV broadcast is going to be making for a much better experience there. And then for the players as well, that can only improve their games because they're going to really be able to hone in on what they need to do.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's going to be great. I think they need it for years. So birdie for them, but also when these stats come out, watch out. And I'm sure there'll be some idiot golfer that's a 4 handicap that says some dumb stuff about women's golf. I think what this also tells me, it's Ryder Cup week. They need a a mixed event of Ryder Cup, men's and women's, USA versus Europe. Yeah. Like, do it once and it will blow up. I think it'll be one of the best. But we're not getting into that this week because it's the actual Ryder Cup. We're going to get that later. What's your par for the week?
Par from you, I'll go back to the LPGA as well. And this is kind of funny because I watched a little bit of the Cambia Porton Classic. Obviously, it was a rain shortened event. Jin Young Ko won her ninth event of her career. The fact that, she's now 26. But I'm giving it a par because I sort of expect it now. I sort of take her for granted because she is such a talent. Obviously it's, we'll call it a birdie because she has won and she's got this ninth win and now she's up to 19 professional wins. She had 10 wins on the Korean LPGA tour by the time she was 22, but I'm giving it a par because as soon as I see her in the mix, I almost just hand her the trophy, really, that it comes down to. And that's probably not fair to her and it's probably not fair to the other players, but she's that level of a competitor and she's that skilled. And again, another person who's fantastic with a putter in her hand. And Gareth Rafleski, a previous guest on the show, we can give a lot of credit to because he's done a lot of short game work with her. But just fantastic to see her win again. But certainly every time she's in the mix, you expect her to get it done.
Yeah, she hasn't won a major in 2 years, so like I don't know. I think she's washed up at this point.
Yeah, totally.
that 2019, four wins, two majors. could have had technically had the sixth major with the CP Women's Open in there. Just an amazing. I didn't watch any the ladies golf either this weekend, unfortunately. I really didn't watch golf much this weekend. I'm planning on just couching a lot this weekend. Yeah. It's a big weekend. You got the Ryder Cup. Football's back too. Like Sunday is going to be awesome. Just two screens going, football on one, Ryder Cup on probably three if you really think about it. Yeah. Multiple football games, Red Zone, and then the Ryder Cup all in one. Like, and if the Ryder Cup's doing it well, they're getting off early in the morning. I don't know what the schedule is, but get off early in the morning, get it going so you're not competing with football. Because unfortunately, whether the Ryder Cup likes it or not, football will take over, even though it's been a couple years. My par for the week is Brooks Koepka in general. And why it's a par is I just don't know. He just goes all over the place for me and it's not really making sense. So he comes out with his comments about the Ryder Cup. They are what they are. The Ryder Cup isn't for everybody. He's not wrong in the fact that, like, hey, everyone has their individualized routines and now they're like the US, are they trying too hard and everything they do and all these events versus like letting the players actually prepare in their way, whether they like it or not. I've talked about this, like, golf is just such a random sport that, hey, if you lose in a singles match, nobody's going to say what's wrong with you. It's right. Like, oh, the other guy beat you. But when you play in doubles, oh, what's wrong with this team? Right. It's just like, it's a forced thing that they're trying to do. So like that, like his comments, like, I get it. Like I maybe the Ryder Cup isn't for everyone. He thinks he'll be remembered by majors, not by Ryder Cup records. And I think that's probably correct. He's won four majors. The reason why you remember guys like Ian Poulter and Sergio for their Ryder Cup records is because outside of the Ryder Cup, they are what they are. Sergio has that one major. Ian Poulter doesn't. Like, they're known for that because that's kind of their major, unfortunately, right? Where Brooks doesn't view it that way. So I'm giving a par for those comments. But then you come out and you fight all these things about Bryson and you do the whole, anyone that gets kicked out of a tournament, I'll send you beer for it. And then the Brooksy stuff happens. And then they get there and you clearly know he's doing the PR when he walks up to him on the range, probably said absolutely nothing to him and then walks away and they cheer. And then it's like, and then he does this retweet thing on Instagram where he posts it. He's like, teammates being it's just like, I like that. Cause we want people to say stuff in golf, but it's like, Brooks, what are you doing? Like, who are you? Like, choose who you are.
Well, the fact that they had chatted on the range and that was the banger headline, the top story on RyderCup.com last night. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, seriously, lazy journalism, find something to talk about, find a story, don't feed to the common denominator, the low hanging fruit or whatever like this. I mean, really? I mean, the fact he went and talked to him on the driving range. Come on.
Did you see this picture that they had on the Ryder Cup's main website?
Yes, I saw with the club backwards.
The American player, yeah. Club backwards, with a glove on his bottom hand.
Yeah, exactly.
Posing over. This is the Ryder Cup. Whoops. And maybe we're going to get to some best bets later. But I got Europe by a million. After seeing that, it's like attention to detail. They're trying to put all this stuff in, and that's the picture you post. Like, just trash. But yeah, so that's one thing with him. And then I just don't know. I don't know where his head is at. It's just confusing. I like that.
Doesn't matter.
No, really? It's like, and that's why it's a par, because at the end of the day, does it matter if you two putt for par, or does it matter if you get up and down for par? I think a chip in par, you're pretty ecstatic, because it's like, wow, I did a bunch of crap until I get to that point. But hey, I chipped in. By the end of the day, it's still par on the card. So I don't know. I think Brooks, and then his comments about if I win a major every year for the next, 15 years?
Yeah.
I'll give you $500 if Brooks is playing at 45.
Yeah.
This is not a guy that's grinding it out on the PGA Tour at 45.
And you don't expect that of many players these days or whatever.
No, and not a guy with the money he's going to have at that point. And he's just my par for the league.
Right. And I get it. It's true. Yeah. You could win one major every year for the 15, but
you won't.
Will it happen? odds are pretty slim. Mathematically, yes, it can happen. Will it? Yeah.
I think somebody did the math on Tiger's winning percentage of you're not even going to win a tournament every year for the next 15 years or 10 or if you had to put a number on it right now, I think the only time we get asked these questions is when they win.
Of course.
So with Brooks, if you had to put a number on how many more majors or tournament wins you think he's going to get, what would you say?
I'll give him six more wins and one more major.
Wow.
Would you even give him that?
I have the one major. I'll give you the one major. I'm thinking like three wins. I just don't see this guy that committed in 5-10 years. Like, how old is he? 33, right? Like, he's getting to the point, like, would five wins in the next 7 years, one of those being a major, be a bad thing? Like, I think that's a good career. So he's 31, I guess. Sorry.
He was done now, he'd still have a significant career in the fact that he won four majors for sure. But
Hall of Famer?
Ooh, I don't think so at this point. I mean, I get
four majors.
I get it. Four majors. That's a big thing, but you know, he's still got a lot of time. This is a case of where you need that time to play out to see what else happens to support that. And I get it. A lot of people will say, there's a lot of other people that are in there with, you know, two majors and, you know, get a players championship or whatever that's in there. So the standard is certainly there that'll, he could be elected there. Is that really greatness? I mean, it's amazing that you've won four majors, but if that's all that you win, I mean, you know, think about this. Andy North won two U.S. Opens and a Westchester Classic. Two U.S. Opens. I mean, how many people have won two U.S. Opens? Not many at all. Mm-hmm. But does that make him a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, that's fair. No. We're way off North track, is. But I think it's a good question. Like, if his career ended right now.
Right.
I don't know. I think it's a good question to ask. I don't know. We could be also, like, I think Brooks is like DJ. In the sense that once we start counting the guy out, like, remember when he won the he just won the waste management recently, right? Yeah. Like, nobody was talking about Brooks going into that week. He was 65-1 odds. Yeah. Like, people forgot about him. He sees that and he wins. It's just like, so who knows? Maybe next year he comes out and wins two majors. Would you be shocked if he won the Masters? No. So I don't know. No, we're in this weird spot with
Brooks. We don't know where he's going, and that's why he's
a par. Yeah, exactly. All right, what's your bogey for the week?
My bogey of the week is actually related to the Ryder Cup. We were listening to some XM satellite radio on the way back from the golf course yesterday, and the continual discussion about the pod talk. And I'm not talking podcast talk. I'm talking about individual small groupings within the team themselves for the Ryder Cup teams, and especially on the US side of it, and whether it's a successful way to go about doing things. I mean, here's the thing. I don't always think that just because you do something and somehow it works,
that doesn't mean it's always the cause for it. And people sort of forget that. And I think a lot of people get caught up in the fact that, oh, you know, Paul Issinger, and he did pods, and, you know, he's going to be the greatest captain because they won. Well, you know what? There could be a lot of other reasons why they won. Don't think that, you know, having pods is the magic way to make things happen. You know, it's not proven statistically. So I think just having that discussion over and over again that, oh, they should have these pods, and these guys should be in these pods, and these guys should be together, and they should be eating together and doing things. Here's the thing. In the end, we're all guessing. We are all guessing. And if we think that we have some greater insight over anyone else, we're kidding ourselves. And Craig Stadler was the guest last on the show that we were listening to. And, you know, he talked a lot about it. I mean, yes, it was a different time when he played the Ryder Cup as far as the publicity and the size of the Ryder Cup and everything. But, you know, as he said, we're just a team. We're a bunch of guys. We all hung out. We didn't decide, you know, we just played with whoever we played with as far as practice rounds. You know, yes, there's lots of other details that you can get into. Are they going to make it, you know, a 100% chance that it's going to be, you know, you're going to win? Guess what? You're going to win or you're going to lose. There's no somewhere in between. Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, trying to sit there and go back to this pod talk over and over again and think that's some sort of magic solution. I don't think it is.
Yeah. I think people don't really understand it either. It's like, what we're talking about is a leadership approach that generally you'll see in business.
Correct.
And pretty much everyone listening to this has probably been in a pod without actually realizing.
Right. True.
So like, if you look at something like, you know, Walmart, you work out, you're a Walmart employee, right? They put you into different departments, right? So you can be crafted, say, in electronics, and that's built in a pod. You right. say your 8 employees report up into your manager. Yeah. At that place of business where you get paid to work, right? You don't think, oh, we're in a pod. So like, I really want to work hard for mm-hmm. the rest of the pod. No, you don't, because you're an individual, right? And like, at the end of the day, all I care about is I'm doing my job so I can get paid the salary I am guaranteed to be paid. So that's why with the Ryder Cup, you're kind of doing the same thing, right? You're a team trying to win this overall goal, but you are in many ways this individual contributor mm-hmm. that golf just naturally happens, right? So like yeah. when we're talking about when Paul Issinger did that whole thing and created these pods, these agile pods, if they lost that year, you would have said Paul was trying too hard, right? And that, you know, why did he do that in the first place? Yeah. Right. You don't hear about this in the NHL. You don't hear about this yeah. in the NFL. You don't hear about these things because they're, you know, it's not necessarily guaranteed to work.
No, exactly. And the other side of it too, and that's a great analogy in explaining it related to business. In a business environment, those pods or teams are created for a long term. These are people doing development together over a longer period yes. of time. Ryder Cup, you know what? When do we know when the teams were? A couple weeks ago. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. there's not long-term development. You can't just sit there and throw 4 people together at a business and go, hey, you're a pod. Hey, tomorrow you're going to all do a presentation together. It's going to be fantastic because you're all working together. I mean, think about that in high yeah. school. Did that work? I mean, when yeah. you were a partner with somebody, might be a different story if you were partnered with that person at the very start of the year and you got to know their personality.
At the end of the year, your grade was their grade. Like the
exactly.
same thing.
Exactly. Then but you're, it's then more you of buy a in.
Term. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's why I don't think intellectually, and I mean, somebody can argue with it all they want. This is merely my opinion, but I think there's just it's too short term to expect that something like a pod is going to make a difference.
And I can go like, I could talk this all day with people. If you want to go into things like the Dunbar number and things like that, I get nice. Real nerdy on people that type of stuff.
Who? What?
Oh yeah. People are looking up, you know, like there's Google all that type of stuff. Yeah. Like it's very interesting. Yeah. It's all sociology. If you really yeah, want to break it down, and maybe Paul's into that sociology conversation. I didn't think we were getting this deep today, but yeah, look all that stuff up. You actually want to understand, you know, the idea behind this, maybe it works, but so far I agree with you. I think these type of things are built for long-term, not short-term. Short-term goals, you know, tighten it up, put them all into a bundle, find out who wants to be near each other. It's a short-term thing. You're not going to build, like, for example, like Bryson and Brooks, you forcing them together for 1 week isn't long enough for them to become best friends and move on past all their things.
Yeah.
So do whatever it makes sense for them just to get by for the week. And then, you know, at the end of the week, we'll see who wins.
Yeah. And that goes back to, you know, exactly what Stadler was talking about in players choosing who they wanted to play with. They chose those people or those, you know, that they want to play practice rounds with and played events with because of the social relationship that was already created, which obviously, you know, goes back to what you're talking about with Dunbar's number. Social relationships are important, but you can't force a social relationship. And it's very difficult to force those things to happen and expect some sort of result out of it. That's positive in the way that you want.
Like, so for example, you go to a party, let's talk about, you know, the big golf show in Orlando, the PGA show in Orlando, right? Yeah. You go there, you're going to go to the people you want to be around. You're not going to go over to, you know, I don't know, a company. Let's say for you, like say Barstool had a booth there. You don't know the Barstool guys. I know you don't really align with their values. You're not going to go over there and just have a conversation with them and be like, hey, these are the guys I'm hanging out with for the week. It's like, I don't really want to do that. So I'm not going to put myself in that situation for 1 week. When I only have a week, I'm going to choose who I want to be with. And that will make my time the best. And I'll probably perform the best in my job, which will be covering the PGA show. So we don't need to break this down further. I love that. That's a bogey for you. Cause I really do agree. My bogey for the week on the Ryder Cup front really quickly goes the European Tour's clothing rep. Rory McIlroy has been on this team for six times. And he said why he doesn't wear a hat isn't because he likes not wearing a hat. It's because his head's so small that hats look dumb on him and he has to get them custom made by Nike. Rory McIlroy is going to be on this team every year.
Get him hats.
Get him hats. Like, it's not that difficult to figure this out at this point. Like, figure it out early. Get him in early. Like, there's no way that they've tried this and then he gets there. He's like, no, they still don't fit. Like, do it 2 years in advance. Like, for next one, do it. Like, it makes no sense. And maybe, you know, maybe it plays into Rory's record, which we're going to get to later. I kind of pulled up some records of, like, is there some shocking records of the Ryder Cup? We'll chat about that later. But that's my bogey really quickly. I'm going to give quick honorable mention, then we're going to break down the Ryder Cup and preview that. Mine goes to, it's a hole in one is my honorable mention. It goes to Jake Martinez. Jake Martinez is 11. He was playing in a U.S. kids event, the Palm Springs Open. He had two hole in ones in that event in seven holes. So on the fifth hole, he aced.
So I'm 51 and I've had one. So he had two in how long?
Seven holes. Yeah. So, so he aced the 95 yard par three, and then seven holes later with the same club as pitching wedge, he aced the 100 yard par three 12th hole, same club. It's funny, cause I was reading it. Like I need to tell his dad to just stop. It was like, aim here and hit a nice little draw in there. Like, don't tell an 11-year-old to do that. Just hit give him the yardage, hit the middle of the green. But apparently it worked two hole.
I mean, I wonder what sport he's going to take up next. Cause obviously he's peaked. So he might just walk off now. He won't think that. Just like we're talking about as far as golf performance. Oh, it's going to keep going. I'm going to make 100 of these hole in ones. They're easy to make or whatever. Well,
that's why Kim Jong Un stopped playing. Yeah, exactly. Right? He shot 18 on his first round of golf.
Sorry, Jake. It might be all downhill from here, bud.
Yeah, exactly. What's your honorable mention for the week?
My honorable mention is to Katie Rutherford. Maybe people are not really familiar with this player, but you know, from Calgary, a Canadian player who just finished her collegiate career and finished third in her first pro event. But she got an exemption into the Mackenzie Tour PGA Tour Canada ATB Financial Classic in her hometown. Went out in there and played. Obviously nervous. First round. Went out, shot 79. Difficult golf course there at Country Hills. Scoring wasn't particularly low during the week, but she fired an even par 71 in the second round. Said she felt a little bit more at ease, made four birdies, dusted a whole bunch of the players out there. So honorable mention birdie for her. And you know, keep an eye for this player. I mean, obviously she's capable of doing that on that stage in only her second professional event. She's definitely somebody to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I like it. I like though, like we always talk about the up and coming men. I feel like there's more media attention of it. You have always done a great job. Anytime we have somebody on here, they always, you know, give you a lot of credit for those little stories of not only the men's side, but the women's side. So if you're saying watch out, because I've seen a lot of players where I'm like, whoa, who's this guy? And you drop a you know, like it's a kick in the pan or, you know, whatever, kick in the bucket, yeah. you know, not, I wouldn't look too closely at it. Yeah. And you're 90%, I would say you're right. So if you're saying watch out here, I think y'all should watch out for it. Let's break down the Ryder Cup though, Scotty. Lot of chatter this week, you know, where's it going? The U.S., you know, won last time, won big last time, right? So here we are.
Wait, Europe won big last time.
Yeah, I was thinking it 2 years ago. Wow.
Are you an American all of a sudden?
Yes. Yeah.
So you're thinking in your mind.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, I'm watching a lot of American politics at times. You don't have to ever be right. You just say whatever you want, right? Isn't that part of it? True. So, yeah.
That's because if you just say it over and over again, it'll become true, right?
Yes, right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Right. Yeah, so the European team won last time. The Europeans Waxed have been them. On a great run. So let's break it down. What do you want to chat about? Like, what are you thinking about? What's been the main storyline going into the week? And then maybe at the end, we'll give a final take of who we think will win and what the score will be. We'll break down a bunch of different stories, but where do you want to start?
Yeah. You know what? It's been interesting. I think first off, I'm kind of sick of the hype, you know, and I just saw an actual, and that's great to talk about golf. This one's interesting because we had a year delay. This was supposed to happen in 2020. So there's a lot of pent up demand for this Ryder Cup, but, I sort of want this week to get going a little faster. And I actually saw a tweet about somebody discussing, you know, going to the President's Cup format versus the Ryder Cup format and to make it 4 days just so we can get rid of the preamble and get to the competition a little bit earlier. And, you know, I'm not feeling upset about if that would happen. I think the biggest thing about this, my first sort of take on it, and I'd love to hear your comments as well, is that do we make this, and I say we because I include us from a media side of it, but do we make this too much about not what it was to be in the first place? So in 1927, when the first one was played, it was supposed to be, you know, camaraderie, entertainment, you know, yes, we want to beat each other, but, you know, it's a friendly match. Let's get together. Now it seems, and obviously, you know, that links back to, you know, 1991, the war on the shore in Kiowa. It seems like this is a zero-sum situation where in the end, my perspective is that everybody wins. You know, we all win as golf fans of seeing these competitions, seeing these great players that are out there. I think too much emphasis, you know, and yes, I'd want to win if I was on that, you know, on the one side or the other, but people make it out like, you know, that 12 people are going to kill 12 people. You know what I mean? It's golf. That's what it is. And a lot of different things can happen out of it.
I don't know enough about the European side, so you'll have to actually, you know, you've kind of ran stories on this for probably the better part of 20 years of your life of the Ryder Cup. But from an American side, it feels like that's how they are with everything, though. Like everything is about winning, right? You still see arguments to this day, and they're idiots, but like on Twitter, somebody like, well, how many world wars did your country win? And it's like stuff like that. It's like, it's all about winning. It's all about that. That's just how, you know, they are. They're competitive. It's a very competitive country, right? It's just in their blood. Right. It feels like the European side, and maybe it's just a feel, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong. It's not really about that. It's like, yeah, this is going to be fun. We're looking forward to it. We want to win, but like, it's not, you never heard of when the U.S. kept winning over and over. You didn't hear of the, you know, the team that got together. The task force that got together to figure it all out or whatever. Yeah. So I don't know. That's just my, you know, my theory. Do you think it's a fair theory looking back at all the times you've covered the Ryder Cup?
Yeah, I think that perception is pretty accurate. I mean, again, it's sports, you know what? We are chasing wins, you know, that's something that we think about, but again, I don't think this is the essence of this competition. I mean, if you think about it, going back over the years, you know, the European Tour didn't have a lot of exposure. Especially early on, especially if you look back at the before Europe was brought into the Ryder Cup back in 79. And, people in the U.S. didn't know about all these great players that were over there. So this was an event that always brought more exposure, and it did for, you know, 50 years before that. I think now we're more familiar with a lot of the European players because they do come over and play in the US on a regular basis. We see them in the World Golf Championships. There's more exposure as far as the majors are concerned. I think you're right. I think the Europeans look at it as a fun week to get together. The fact that they're always, you know, the underdogs, whether they are or not, because a lot of people can favor them, but they can still be the underdogs because, you know what, they have that underdog mentality because they're the smaller tour. The European tour has always played second fiddle to the US PGA tour, the PGA tour, you know, being the top one in the world. But as a result of it, I think that's where the PGA tour and some of the American fans trip up some of the times, because they think because the PGA tour is the top tour in the world, the deepest tour in the world, that automatically that dominance will carry over to the Ryder Cup. But, you know, the attitude here is just to go out and play, have as much chemistry as possible, enjoy yourself. Whereas, you know, trying to make it into some sort of, you know, life or death thing. Also a big business situation, which also puts other pressures on the players. We can get to that. I think that life and death mentality also puts a different mentality with the players as well when they play, whether they admit it or not.
Yeah, I think we're right, but also at the same time, we're trying to.
But we're also talking
watching
about
it. Yeah, we love watching it. So it's weird that we're saying all that. It's like we're almost kind of talking down this tournament, even though we love watching
it. We love it, but yeah. I want this. I want this for me, and that's my take on it. I want to enjoy it. That's it.
Yeah,
I enjoy the week. Yeah. Whatever happens, I just want to see great competition. I know that sounds like I'm sitting on a fence one way or the other, but I do have an opinion who I think will play better or otherwise, and we'll get to that. But I think the biggest thing here is just to have a great week of competition and have as much focus on that and realize and understand that these are the best players in the world. And they'll admit it as well. If you go and look at the press conferences, even today and yesterday, a lot of things can play into your record or play into an event that you don't have a lot of control over. And, you know, we go and judge a player and you'll talk about some records of players. You know, we're looking just at numbers. That doesn't always tell you what actually happened.
No, like, for example, Bryson's played in one of these. He's 0-3 in his overall record.
Yeah.
Right. That could have been his partner. Right. Correct. In the last one. But he still lost a singles match. Right.
Right.
So, you know, he's 0-2 in foursomes, which is like he's technically playing his own ball. But like maybe like I feel like the U.S. for some reason, and maybe it's just the world we live in. Everyone's just very me now. And you. Now, like, we're going back into sociology. Is that still the case in Europe? Like, is that the case in Europe? Like, anytime I've been in Europe, it doesn't feel like, hey, I'm the most important. There's if you just look at the culture of Europe, right? Like, let's dive into some more sociology here. I think we've touched something in my brain that I want to go down. You go think of the culture in Europe, right? You talk about going to like Ireland, for example. Every single day you walk downtown Dublin, there are people everywhere outside the pub just having a drink, hanging out, yada yada yada, and it's very chill and good, and it's relaxed, and everyone goes home at a certain point and whatever. That doesn't really happen every single day in the US. And if it does, it sounds bad. It's more of like that young culture of, like, you know, frat boys going out and stuff,
or the, like, priority. The priority is me and what I can get.
Yeah. And that's just like that. And maybe as Canadians, we feel like we can talk on this matter as you've kind of done both. But like, it just feels like there's way more emphasis in European culture to, you know, come together and you know, friendship and all of that. Yeah. And that's the important stuff. And then the US culture, it feels like the most important thing is me, money, things along those lines. Yeah. I don't know. It's just a theory. I don't know if that actually plays the Ryder Cup.
I mean,
now we're getting crazy. We gave ourselves a bogey for the pod talk, like that actual pod. And now we're breaking down the sociology of drinking outside of a bar with your buddies. And if that plays into the fact that the Ryder Cup, the US and the Ryder Cup these days aren't winning.
Well, think about a pub. In the UK, I mean, you go into the pub, you sit down, you can go there by yourself, and you end up chatting with a whole bunch of other people and having deep conversations and also not to say that can't happen, you know, in the States.
No, but we don't do that, right? Like, I think just really quickly on your thought, just but I'll let you continue. Like, I went to get a haircut. It's a joke because I don't have hair, but like a beard trim the other day. Sure. My buddy runs a hairdresser place called Hair of the Dog in Kingston. Check it out. But also has a bar inside. And I just wanted to have a beer at the bar. And there's another guy there. And I didn't want to talk to him. Like, I didn't, I know he was right there. I didn't really want to talk to him, but he struck up a conversation. We ended up having a good conversation.
Yeah.
That feels normal to right. me that yeah. I'm probably the norm here. Yeah. That's like, hey, this person beside me, I'll just act like they're not actually there in Canada when I sit at a pub if I'm there alone, versus when you go to Europe, you sit down beside anybody at a bar. And I can think of a time when we were in Galway, my wife and I, we sat down beside a guy. We had a conversation with the guy for an hour, and that felt like every place we went, that's how they are. So continue your thought. Tell me if that's where you're going.
Yeah, pretty much. Because, you know, again, UK, sit down, have a chat, have a conversation. US, let's go to the bar so we can be seen. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Or something, some other motive or whatever the case may be. You know, it's far more complicated than that, obviously. And we're simplifying it for the sake of a conversation. But there's definitely a different mentality of team versus individual. Whether that plays into performance, obviously people smarter than us can you know, kind of weigh into that. But again, you know, if you go and you enjoy yourself and you have fun, even if you lose, you'll have a great time for the week. And I think really, you know, that's what we should get out of this. The fact that it's good stuff. Otherwise, here's what's going to happen on the other end next week. What's going to happen if the Europeans win? I mean, you know, it's going to be mayhem, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be, you know, wringing our hands. Oh, what did we do? What can we do better? Who played terrible? Why should they not be on the team? What's Steve Stricker's fault? And I mean, seriously, folks, I mean, I get it. You're trying to fill airtime. And obviously we have a podcast and we're trying to talk and
we're going to do it next week too.
Yeah. Right. But, you know, to look at it as, you know, it's no good if we lose and it's the best if we win, I think that's short-sighted of what the competition really is all about.
You have my brain just in an absolute knot right now. I have a research article open called The Immigrant Paradox. Immigrants are less antisocial than native-born Americans. And now I have a full day of like diving into this theory that,
sorry,
you know, why are Europeans actually more social and than Americans? I don't know. Maybe it's just, it could also, I think we're also in a world of this, like
analysis, this, over analysis,
and like showing off, like Instagram, TikTok, all these different things.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe there's more, there's a longer history in Europe where there isn't. I'm not bringing it down further. I'm going to dive into some research papers at some point. Let's get into some people's records. People are like, what is this podcast? Let's get into some records. I was just kind of diving through, some records and just some numbers here. And I think that one thing that shocks me, even though it is numbers, there's not many guys on the European side that have losing records. There's only two. One's John Rahm, who I'm not worried about. He's the best player in this entire tournament right now is John Rahm. I think he's going to come out firing because this will fire him up. The other's Matt Fitzpatrick, who whatever, it was 2016. He was a rookie. But on the American side, there is more losing records, like Bryson obviously being one of them. DJ losing record, except for singles, obviously doing well.
Yeah. And do you think in that case though, we should really be judging players based on their singles record, or is it fair to judge them on their team record unless we have their, you know, their teammate record matched up with it?
I think at the end of the day, a point's a point. So your overall record's all that matters, right? A singles point is worth a point. A four ball is worth a point. A foursome is worth a point. They're all worth points, right? So I don't know if you should. I don't think you should be like, as a captain, I wouldn't be choosing people based on their record.
Their team record. Their team record.
Yeah. But at the same time, there's two people on this team that were chosen 100% for Europe based on what they've done in the past. So if that was the case, right, there'd be some other players on the American side. So I think we're just breaking it down crazy. Like, let's just talk about this golf course. Do you actually think it will bring a good Ryder Cup? Is it a good Ryder Cup golf course?
I think, unfortunately, that although we might see, you know, a lot of drama
like wins and losses, that it could be based on pars instead of a lot of birdies.
That's my thought too.
Which is the one, my one concern all the time when you think about a match play golf course. You want a golf course that provides opportunities. I don't necessarily, and I get it that you're also testing a player's skill to get them past, you know, a very difficult hole. Say it's a 510 yard par four that demands a, you know, a long shot in or whatever the case may be. You're not always saying let's have, you know, cupcake shots for everything, but I think variety is important. I don't see a lot of variety in this golf course. Unfortunately, I think from a fan perspective, you know, we're going to see a lot of holes that are won with pars. And if the wind blows, and it's not expected to be too severe here and the temperatures will be okay. It's a little poor for the practice rounds, but, you know, we're going to see in the temperatures in the high 60s and winds are probably, you know, 15 to 20 miles an hour, but that's enough to cause some havoc. So is it dramatic? Yeah, we're going to see some cool shots because they're either going to be really great or they're going to be really poor. But is that what we always want to see from a playing standpoint? My concern over anything is that the ability for a player to show how they can recover might be reduced by this type of golf course, which I think that sort of negates a player's skill and the ability to show off their skill. If we get a golf course that's maybe so penal in areas where they can't show that skill, then it basically means that, you know, we're really looking at only certain amount of skills for these players who also, you know, they all get to their scores and have gotten to the level of the game they're at by a variety of different ways. They're not single-minded as far as how they do things. So I think it'll be great visually. You know, it's a stunning golf course and there'll be lots of great drone shots and stuff, but I'm not sure that if I look back at the majors that have been played here, and I'm not sure that, you know, sometimes we get to see a lot of the cool recovery shots that these players are capable of just because it takes it out of their hands.
Yeah, I guess like that's the cool part about the Ryder Cup is you get to see a lot of the golf course. You get to see all the shots because there isn't that many players out there. So from a TV perspective, you got to only show four groups. So you're going to show a lot of shots that you wouldn't usually see on a week. I'm just going through the courses and like, I'm actually shocked, and maybe you can give me a why. How haven't we ever had a Ryder Cup at St. Andrews or like a Pebble Beach or any of these like big courses that like, is it purely just money? Is that it? Like, I just don't get how we wouldn't do that.
A lot of it. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into it. It's conflicts with other events that are happening and scheduled to be at those places. This is a huge undertaking. So you got to remember that all of a sudden, if you have the Ryder Cup at a place, chances are it's going to take you out of hosting a major at that facility for, you know, quite some time.
Couple years. Yep.
Okay, yeah. So on the other side,
but with St. Andrews, like it's the home of golf. Like at some point we got to do one there.
You would think so, but again, you know, does the RNA want to host it? What's their advantage for hosting it? These are events that are run by the PGA. This is a huge revenue source for the PGA of America and for Europe and the GNI as well. GB&I. So it's different in the aspects of, you look at those golf courses. I mean, they're stadium type golf courses. They're made for, you know, TV events. There's a lot of logistics that go into
some
it.
Bad courses on this list.
But again,
like 79, like the Greenbrier hosted in 1979, like course is a dump.
Yeah. But again, financial stuff, who knows what,
there's a lot of room out there.
Yeah. Who knows what kind of business deals are in there? Who knows what kind of, you know, there's so many other factors. So, always hard to get them at sort of classic golf courses. And that would be cool. I'd love to see a Ryder Cup at the old course, but will we see it? I don't know if we ever will.
Here's my other question. What would you say if they were going to say from going forward, the United States has to pick one course every time we do a Ryder Cup, it's going to be there. And the Europe team has to pick one course, and that's the home track. And it's very much more like a team sports thing. You prepare to go in, like, for example, Seattle in football is like the loudest stadium. You prepare to go into that differently than you do going into, I don't know, Denver, right? Because Denver, you're preparing for the elevation, all those type of things, right? Like, what if they did it the Ryder Cup that way? Would it actually improve the product, that it would get more competitive because you're actually preparing for a golf course you've seen potentially 5, 6, 7 times.
Yeah, it could. And it also could engage the fans in a different way as well, because all of a sudden you go to a venue that fans are not familiar with. You know, they don't relate to the holes as well because they're seeing them for the first time. I mean, it would be great to see U.S. host. Let's host at TPC Sawgrass. Let's host at a golf course that would, you know,
awesome. Has the problem some is, are you going to get to 17, right?
Right. But we have, change the layout, change the routing.
That's true.
But I mean, it would be neat to see because, again, you know, while it's a difficult golf course, it's also a golf course that's a lot of opportunities in it. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's all that entertaining if we take players and then all of a sudden, I mean, this week we're bordering on 7,700 yards. You know, if all of a sudden it just becomes length instead of variety, I mean, I want to see, I mean, the setup could be different. I mean, we could see some drivable par fours. We can, I mean, we want to have that element in there, especially from a match play perspective, because in the end, you know, yes, double bogey beats triple bogey, but who wants to watch that?
That's true. I like, just quickly too, on that front, like we're 3 years removed from an actual good Ryder Cup. If you actually look at the breakdown of points, the last tight one was in 2012 when they played at Medina. And
so 9 years, but three playings.
Yeah. Three playings. Sorry. Yeah. Europe won 14.5, 13.5. And the one prior to that was in Wales at Celtic Manor and same score. But outside of that, like the last kind of 20 years has been just blowouts.
Yeah.
And maybe I think you're onto something more of like, let's get together and focus on the product here of making it more competitive versus, and more entertaining versus like who's going to win. Cause at the end of the day, no, like, I mean, maybe we don't care because we're not European. I mean, you're European, but, and I guess so am I in a more extended way, but yeah. Like, we don't actually have direct ties. We don't live there. They're not our countries, right. Our home countries. So I don't know. I think you're onto something here, and the points might actually tell the story that you're actually telling. Any other storylines that popped up that you want to chat about before we get to maybe some bets, or also our final score that we think and who we think is going to win?
Well, I'm interested about what your thoughts are on the impacts of the captain. I mean, obviously we have a single captain, we have 5 vice captains, and
what do they do?
The vice captains,
they just drive around a golf cart.
They basically put a microphone in their ear or put a headphone in their ear or whatever and monitor that match and then obviously give feedback to the main captain. But I'm just wondering what you think are the impacts of the captains, especially this year. Stricker obviously for the USA, Patrick Harrington for Europe. They're both guys that are very professional and they're both well respected. Maybe a slightly different way of going about things. You know, Stricker's a little bit calmer. Harrington's always a little bit more fired up or whatever. But do you think this is really a ceremonial position, or do you think it really has an impact on play overall and the attitude of the players? Maybe
I think it has more of an impact on the attitude of the players, which could have an effect on the play overall. Now look at those two captain teams, right? If you had to hang out with one of those teams for a week, just burst on their actual people here, who are you choosing? Are you choosing the USA team? Or are you choosing Europe?
Ooh, that's a great question.
I'll give you my thoughts.
But I know where I'm going right away, and yeah. we're going to the pub with the Euros.
Yeah, because everybody on Europe I want to hang out with.
Yeah,
Padre is hilarious. Luke Donald is an awesome dude. Robert Carlson, don't know much about him. Martin Keimer, everything we've heard about that guy's awesome. Graham McDowell, Henrik Stenson. You go over to the USA. Like I don't like Zach Johnson. I have zero interest in hanging out with Davis Love, Jim Furyk as well. Like Fred Couples and Phil, like those guys sound like a good hang. And Stricker's kind of just calm, cool, and collect. Like that might have an effect on it overall, where you actually have this, you know, this young group in the US that maybe that's what they should be doing. Maybe they should have had more of those guys that aren't the dads overlooking and more of like the uncles coming in.
Yeah. And you know what? And there's an interesting comment Colin Morikawa had today, and they were talking to him, about the mentality, and Patrick Cantlay as well. They were talking about the mentality of what the players are like. And Cantlay was big on this too. He was saying about the fact that, you know, everybody sort of has their guard up. all the time when they play the PGA Tour and they're there on their own. And, you know, while they see other players, they don't really reveal themselves to the other players. They don't want to show off their weaknesses or, you know, give up too much of themselves. Whereas I think there's a little bit more vulnerability in the Europeans because they have sort of, we're going back to the sociology again, you know, that aspect of, you know, they're not quite as guarded. They're there to, you know, help each other up and give a hand up. And the number of times I've heard about, you know, European tour players helping other players down on the challenge tour or whatever, or accommodating them over at their house in US so that they can come over and play and stuff like that. Whereas it's so individualized. And I think that leads over to the, you know, the discussion as far as the vice captains and the dad versus uncle talk. The uncle talk is, you know, they can converse with them back and forth. They have that, they don't have their guard up. Whereas if all of a sudden, you know, if you're a pure rookie, even if you know them or not, I can't imagine Scottie Scheffler having a conversation with Davis Love III and not being intimidated by him in some way, right?
Yeah.
Versus being like, oh, okay, well, you know, Scottie Scheffler probably a little bit more relaxed if there was some other, you know, vice captain that, you know, is a little bit more laid back or whatever, non-intimidating. And, you know, maybe that changes the dynamic of how they deal with them during the week and how comfortable they feel.
Yeah, I like that. Quickly, we'll do this quickly. If you look at each team, who ends up, and we're going extremes for US and Europe, you have to pick one player in the US that's going to go perfect and one player that on the US that's going to go 0 points. And then same thing on Europe. Who you got in the US? And I'll follow up, then we'll hit up Europe.
All right. Going perfect for US, I'm going to give it to Cantlay. I like his focus this week. I like the thoughts of what he's been talking about. Just the way he's focused on his preparation. I like his play, obviously, coming into this event. And despite the fact that he is a rookie, he's got a fair amount of experience. And I think mentally he's strong as well. And I think he's got the ability to make his teammate better. You know, he can always control his own himself as far as singles are concerned, but I think it really comes down to being a really good teammate, much like a caddy is. And we've talked about this a fair bit on this podcast, is that you have to know when to talk and what to say and when to kind of get them going. And I think that's important. And I think Cantlay, we've seen it of late. He's coming out of his shell, which maybe is just a perception that we thought he was like. And I think he'd be prepared to be comfortable to talk to anyone about that and give them that little, you know, pat on the bum and let's go.
Yeah. I think Cantlay showed he can do match play against anybody when him and Bryson went back and forth. So I think it's a good pick. I'm going with Daniel Berger. You know, I don't like this guy, but this guy's fiery.
Grinder.
He's going to go hard. I think he's a guy that will play mind games, I think, too. Watch out for that. I think he's going to play a little bit of mind games out there. So I'm picking Daniel Berger for going perfect this week. Who's not getting a point for the U.S. team?
I am going to go. Ooh, wow. It's tough because obviously it's a stack of great players. I'm going to say Harris English, believe it or not, even though I think he's a quality player and has that potential, I don't know how comfortable he's going to feel in this environment. There's a lot of star power there. While he definitely belongs, I don't know if he believes he belongs there.
That's fair. I'm going Bryson. I want him to be 0-6 after 2 years. I just think
going to think he's either going to go all the way up or he's going to explode, right?
I actually think that's exactly how it's going to be for Bryson. Yeah. He's either hitting this week perfect or he's getting nothing. Mm. I think he's also doing long drive competition come Monday, if I'm not mistaken, or Tuesday next week. Like, he's got way too much going on. There's all this talk. Like, I think he's distracted. I'm going Bryson.
You could probably swing me over to that side as well.
All right, let's go Europe as well. Who's going perfect for you?
Perfect for me. Boy, oh boy. You know what? Got to go Rombom. I mean, you know what? He's just playing too well. He's got too many great elements that are going for him. And I just think Padre Harrington's going to ride him all week, and rightly so, whether that's, you know, in whatever format with whatever partner. I think he will definitely fire up any other partner that he's with. And I think he would be much like Seve.
he will intimidate you into playing well and going, dude, like pick it up. And he doesn't even have to look at you and you know you have to get going.
I agree. That was the pick. I was going to try to talk myself into Weisberger here and try to find like, but I really don't see. I think he's going to be a deer in headlights out there. For me, I'm going to go Sergio. I think he loves this tournament. I mean, just go with the stats. This guy has done it before. All-time points. Yeah, like he's played. We were talking about how crazy it is that he played one at 19. Like that, will that ever happen again?
I don't know if it will. It would be pretty rare to get someone in that young for sure.
Yeah, like you need a phenom. Maybe it'll be Charlie Woods. He'll play at 19. who's going zero? You can't take Weisberger. That's just unfair to the kid. No,
that's an easy one to take alphabetically.
Yeah, you can't take the guy.
I don't know if I like the play of Shane Lowry of late. I really don't know. While I like his spirit, I like the fact that, you know, he's obviously definitely a team guy. I don't know if the fun aspect will have a bigger priority than the play. So you know what? Yeah, I hate to have to choose, but yeah, I'll take Lowry and as my A, and my B would be Hatton, because I think Hatton can explode both ways. Same as DeChambeau. I think he either goes all the way to the top, wins everything, or just blows out and he's left with one club left in his bag because he's thrown 13 in Lake Ontario Michigan by the end of the week.
That's my thought with it was Hatton, but it's like I wonder if actually being part of a team, he doesn't go the whole selfish route of, you know, being a drama queen, right? Like, and that might be bad, you know.
There's a lot of good club tossers on this team.
Oh yeah, Rory's a good one for sure. For me, I'm going Fitzpatrick again. He just does nothing for me, and he showed that he couldn't do it last time, so let's just stick with the stats and prove me wrong to Matty Fitz. All right, let's wrap it up. Let's pick let's give our winning team here.
Yeah.
And what score we think it will be. I'll let you go first.
I am going to go with the Euros, and I will go 15.5, 12.5. I'd say it's going to be I don't think that's going to be a close 12.5. That could be the one where they get it done early, and then the US team coasts in with a few extra points. So it looks great stats wise, but not so much.
Yeah, I'm kind of right in that. I don't want to just copy you. I'll go bigger. I think, the Euros, I think they're just going to match what they did last time. I'm going Euros 17.5 to 10.5, just an absolute waxing again. Jeez. I think you're hearing no stories about the European team. It's just all sunshine and rainbows. Everything I've heard out of their camp is good. It's nothing about the individuals. It's nothing about Brooksy and Bryson chatting on the range. It's just go out there. They're going to get their job done. They're going to be spraying champagne. Rory's going to not have a hat on. They're going to win. I know from a betting odds standpoint why it's Euro. You're getting better money on it.
Yeah,
but like from an act, like from a booking standpoint, there's more people that bet on sports in the United States they get killed if the US actually come out.
Yeah.
So but like I just, you're getting plus money on Euro. Go take it. And then you can even go in deeper. You can actually pick literally on certain sites where you could pick what I'm saying here, like the Euros with this many wins with this many points, and you're gonna get even more money. So I like Euro as well. We'll find out next week though. And then next week, maybe we'll pick our next captains for these. I think that could be a fun little chat. I'm looking forward to breaking it down, actually just watching some golf for 3 days. Some good golf packed into 3 days.
Are you going to be the guy just sitting there watching, or will you be the guy second screening and, you know, tweeting, texting back and forth with a group of people, or just pure sit back, enjoy?
I think I've kind of let Twitter go for the last couple weeks. I've been kind of off. I think I need to get out there and try to make some viral tweets again. I'll be tweeting a lot, I think, this weekend about what's happening.
All right.
Just quickly on Twitter, like, don't you love the tweets where it's like, oh my God, that's all it is. Like stuff like that, where it's like, they're clearly watching a sporting event that like they're known for. Like, obviously if I tweeted that, it'd be something probably related to golf. It's like, what does this mean? And then go back 4 years later, it's like, good what thing there's that? Not. Good, like, I don't know. Maybe there is, but like, I like that. You know how Facebook has Facebook memories? I'm really glad there isn't Twitter memories of like, you know, 10 years ago, you tweeted this. Like, I have no idea what that means.
You should regret this from 5 years ago. That's what it
you should. Yeah, you
say.
Should delete this if you want a job from 5 years ago. That would help a lot of kids are coming out of college right now looking for their first jobs. Oh, all right, Scotty, let's hit the mailbag for the week.
Yeah, let's get to it. Obviously, a lot of golf questions this week related to the Ryder Cup. Some not so golfy, but still related to the Ryder Cup. What's the best Wisconsin beer and why is it Miller High Life? So if people are not really familiar, which maybe they should, a lot of German immigrants came to Wisconsin, a lot of breweries, big area for beer. And obviously, you know, we have somebody with sort of some links and ties that way here on the pod. So any thoughts on that? Have you really delved into the Wisconsin beer scene?
I have not.
You're
really
Googling right now, aren't you?
I am. Yeah.
I already know off the top of my head, you know, some of the different breweries and things like that. But I would say probably, I'm not going to say
Miller's
the
oldest one. So
it is, but I would say probably, you know, Pabst Blue Ribbon is probably the one that's really well known as far as Wisconsin. Right. You know, it's probably going to be some other craft brewery in some place. I don't have enough experience Wisconsin beer to really give a lot of things on it. So the fact that this person loves Miller High Life, hey, you know what? I had a college roommate. He lived on that stuff and he's still alive. So it must be.
He's still alive. He lived on it. Exactly. I'm actually trying to see if I can find what you actually can buy at the Ryder Cup from a drink standpoint.
That should be a good stand. I never really thought about that. They obviously would be interested to see who the official beer was. There's got to be somebody. I mean,
looks like you can get Tito's Vodka.
Their official sponsor. Yeah,
Jim Beam is out there. Right. Wisconsin favorites like Old Fashioned or Bloody Marys. Not seeing much about beer on here. I figured,
really.
Yeah, so it's probably, I'm going to guess, Miller Lite, Coors Light, the usuals out there. And I'm sure there's some crafts in there. But from the website, those Tito's paid for their name on there. So did Jim Beam. So, yeah, I mean, the High Life, you know, the champagne of beers. Why don't you? Yeah, I can't argue against whoever asked that question.
Yeah. Anyways, great one. Keep those coming. We love the stuff that's not always just golfy, but golf adjacent. That's for sure. Number two question here, which player on each Ryder Cup team will their captain regret having on the team this week? Ooh, regret.
I'm going.
Regret could obviously be tied not to performance. It could be some other aspect. So yeah,
100%. That's a good call. And I guess you can only use the captain's picks for this. Right. Just regret. They're on the team.
Just regret.
I think for me, it's Wiesberger for Europe. I know Justin Rose was the other potential pick here. Yeah. Justin Rose has been there before, and Justin Rose does what he does. He putts so well. I think you could have hidden his potential ball striking issues, but I think he would have found it out there. He's Justin Rose. He's got one of the best swings of all time, in my opinion. So I think it's Wiesberger for Europe. And then from an American side,
that's hard. That is so hard. They have such a strong team, really.
Yeah, they do.
Man,
is it?
I don't know.
I'm going Tony. For some reason, Tony's
really
poking out. He's not.
But why though? I mean, here's the thing. Yeah. Was the regret is related to performance or is it related to
that's the problem. I guess that you wouldn't ever regret Tony. You're going to bet again on Tony, right? Like you'd always bet again. I think it's just going to be you know what? I'm not going to give Bryson. I'm going to give it to Brooks. And the fact that, you know, you're not even going to do that. I can't. I got to go Bryson. I think the only answer is Bryson or like Harris English, right? Yeah. Or maybe my argument about Daniel Berger. Maybe he's playing too many head games and it doesn't actually help him, right? It actually hurts the team. So, but Bryson's already been a distraction from day one of this. So maybe it continues, but it's one of those three, but I don't think any of them are like Harris English is not going to do anything that's going to regret. It's like, oh, he didn't play that well. I don't regret it.
Well, that's the thing. Even if, even a player like Tony Finau doesn't get a lot of points, I don't know if you're going to regret having them there, because you're still going to want them there from a chemistry standpoint. There could be other factors and other elements that they have to their game that could make them, you know, something part of the team. And, you know, it's hard for us on the outside looking in and not knowing these players, you know, as well as we could from a personal level to know, you know, how they're going to mix. And maybe there's some sort of, you know, characteristic tick that is really going to put a pain in the ass for any captain or whatever. But I just got to think that, you know, it's got to be Brooks or Bryson for Stricker, just not from a performance standpoint. I think from a distraction standpoint, I think having to sit there and deal with having those answers over and over and over again and having to focus on that. I know Strick will be really good about it. And he certainly has been so far as dismissing anything and any activities, but I think just the distraction of having them there, although, you know, they obviously have to have them there, but, you know, they can still have regret about it. And the fact that, man, it took away from a lot of other things that are going on. And then on the European side, yeah, I got to think Burns the one too. I mean, maybe a great guy as well, but from a regret standpoint, you know, obviously they have a few rookies there. It's got to be Burnt or it could be Shane. Could be Shane in that one too for me too, because that could be tied to performance.
Could be Poulter. Maybe the wheels fall off. Maybe after all these years of, like, you know, carrying it from an emotional standpoint, you know, letting the emotions bring out the game, maybe it finally can't happen.
Yep. Fair enough. All right, let's get down to the next question here. Which player will hit a ball the furthest into Lake Michigan this week?
Scottie Scheffler. I think it's really just like he hits it far, and I think he
just goes sideways.
I think you know, his feet are moving a lot. I think maybe he slips on one and it just heads out there, and he almost makes it all the way over to what's on the other side of Lake Michigan.
On this side, it's going to be Michigan.
Michigan. There you go.
For me, it's going to be Spieth. I just think about Spieth at Chambers Day.
That's good.
You know, a couple of four rights that were there. So I've got to think that, you know, he's still got a wild spot in him once or twice. And well, you know, Bryson's got a little bit more clubhead speed and maybe could get it out a little further that way. I think it could be Spieth, but, you know, that's a
or Terrell.
Or Terrell, that's right. Yeah. Well, which player would throw the club the furthest into Lake Michigan should maybe another question as well. All right, let's get going here. This one is a wacky one. And I think it comes from a friend of ours who maybe I'll mention to it afterwards, but maybe somebody who was going to be on the podcast last week, maybe. So you know who that is right away. With Sunday being the International Day of the Elimination of Nuclear Weapons, and Monday being Crush a Can Monday. Yes, you can't make this up, people. These are the questions that we get. So Monday being Crush a Can Monday, what beer do you think the Europeans will crush after they destroy the Americans in the Ryder Cup?
I think this would be perfect. I know it's an easy answer, but like nobody would actually, in the United States, you would never see somebody pouring a lot of Guinness in it. Like they're like, people are scared of Guinness over here.
I don't know
here.
Why.
Just a bunch of wusses, man. Like if you don't like a Guinness, you don't drink beer.
You know, here's the thing. If you taste a Guinness, you'll realize it's not some dark and nasty beer. It has that coloration to it, but it tastes a lot lighter and creamier than you would ever imagine.
Yeah. So I think there's a Guinness in there, just a lot, and it's going to be, you'll know it's a Guinness. So you know, it's European because it's the foam and the black. All over them, the stout all over the people. They'll hate it, they'll love it, or they go the opposite and they go, you know what, we'll drink your beer, look at us, you know, we're drinking your beer out of our cup that we just continue to win, just because, you know, we'll give you one, you can't actually have your beer in here, so we'll drink it for you in here.
That's the perfect answer. I cannot top that. That's for sure. That is bang on the vein that I would have went either the one or the other. So let's leave it at that one. But hey, you know what? That remains to be seen. And, you know, we may never find out, but let's find out hopefully for next week. All right. Last one here. If there was a sudden death playoff at the Ryder Cup and as captain, you could choose only one player to represent the team in the playoff, obviously, which players would you choose from either side?
I think we're both aligned on Europe. It's John Rahm. Like, you're not picking unless John Rahm breaks his leg. Yeah. It's John Rahm.
I mean, this is this is the, you know, this is the shootout conversation. Okay. Yep. If you got one person to take that shot in hockey for you, who's it going to be? So
the only other guy on there on that list, it's Rory or Rom, and Rory would have to be showing like he's dialed in all week. Yeah. Yeah. Like the driver's dialed in. But John Rom hits it is I think he might actually have better driving stats than Rory this year. And he puts it so good lately. Yeah. So I don't know how you don't pick John Rahm. And I don't think you're going to argue against me on it. So why don't we go to the US where we might actually have a debate? Who would you take?
You know, trying to think about that as far as who can get it done, you got to think of sort of all aspects of their game. The fact that they're going to be, you know, they're going to be in tune and they're not going to hit it sideways. I would normally probably look at somebody like Colin Morikawa, but I would question maybe what would happen with, you know, he ended up with a 3-foot birdie putt and then he ended up missing that. I'm going to take Xander Schauffele. Although he's a rookie, I think he's a guy who controls his emotions well. I think he did a good job of that in the Olympics. Although he hasn't got that major win yet, I like where he's at. Yes. I get it. It might be easier to, you know, to look at a guy named DJ, you know, as far as, but I think DJ can hit some funny ones too, as he's shown in the past in some of the majors. So I'm going to go Xander for my guy as my one-off.
I'm going, you know, hey, this isn't a team event. We're not a team. We don't play as a team usually in this sport. I prepare differently for the weeks. You know, you talk the talk, you're going to win 19 majors. Well, here you go. Put all the pressure on you, Brooks, head on out there. Mm. Right. Let's see what you got to do. I think that like he's got the most majors of the group. Sure. You know, he might not have the most wins a la DJ, but I think in that moment where it's like, you got everybody else He'll want it. Yeah. I don't see DJ as a guy that's like, hey, come on my back. I got you guys. Like, he's more like, trying to find him an analogy here from like he's like Mike Trout's kind of that guy. Like I can't, like, can you think of a sporting analogy of a guy that's like a really good role play? He's a Phil Kessel. There's my answer.
Yeah, he's a Messier.
DJ is Phil. Yeah,
he's Messier. Yeah.
But Messier wanted it. He wanted to be that guy, right? Like, that's the difference. Where DJ, he's so good. He's the top tier, but he's not your captain of your team, the face of
I'm saying Messier is more like Mike Brooks would be. He'd be
I'm talking about DJ in sense. Sorry. Brooks, Brooks is that alpha. Like, he's the Messier. He's you know, he's Wayne in a lot of ways. Like, he's, you know, from a football standpoint, he's Tom Brady. Like, on my back, I'll take you to the promised land. It obviously hasn't shown anything like that, but like from a personality standpoint, where DJ, he just kind of gets it done, but it's like, yeah, it's what I do, right? It's like, I that's why I'm picking Brooks.
On this vein, you know, do you think that players this week, because of the attention on this event, can change their narrative with fans? So do you think that all of a sudden Bryson could make up for every bit of criticism that he's had in the last little while? If all of a sudden he goes perfect, leads the team, does everything he's supposed to do, plays fantastic, how do you think that changes the narrative of how people perceive him?
I think for him, though, it's more than that. Because I think for Bryson to do that, he actually has to prove he's an alpha versus tells somebody he's an alpha, right? And that's like what American fans want. They want the alpha out there. They love Patrick Reed because he was clearly an alpha versus Rory McIlroy, another alpha. They love that matchup and they respect Rory because of that, right? I think Bryson would have to literally win everything, carry the team, fire up the crowd in a genuine way. And that's the problem with him, is everything he does just is so cringeworthy. Like, DJ to do that would be more shocking than when he cried after the Masters. Like, if he went out there and was like fist pumping and screaming, like, that would be more shocking than when he like showed true emotion after winning the Masters. I think Cantlay, same thing. Cantlay talked about the sports psychology behind how he can't actually do what Tiger Woods does, because like he's trained,
he's not wired that way.
Not wired that way. Where I think Brooks can do that. Harris English. Daniel Berger can do that. Yeah. I think Jordan Spieth, same thing. Like, he can, like, those are kind of the guys. I think Bryson can, Justin Thomas can. Justin Thomas might be another good answer for that. Like, who would you send out? But
I think a lot of good choices here.
But from your question standpoint, I just don't like it would be such a big go to the other side.
Right.
And I think the only person that has a chance of changing fans' perspectives would be Bryson. But I also recognize that the American fans, if Bryson isn't playing well early in the week, I think the Brooksy chants come out. I think everything comes out. You can't kick them out. It's not a PGA Tour event, so you can call him Brooksy if he's just dogging it all week.
Do you think they will do that though? I mean, you got to think that, you know, they got to think of the team perspective overall. You know, will the Wisconsin fans and the fans there for the Ryder Cup get all over a player if they're not performing?
Yeah, and it's not because of the player and not performing; it's because of social media. That's going to happen. Yeah, there's going to be Brooksy chants out there when he's not playing well, and just so somebody can. Posted on,
you
know, 100%, whatever golf Instagram account.
I hear you. Yeah. All right. Well, those are that's our mailbag for this week. Certainly keep them coming. Keep them diverse. I think you can maybe take out the International Day of Elimination of Nuclear Weapons out of your future questions, please. Thanks, Brad Lawrence, for that one. Keep them coming. We'll put out a call for questions in the mailbag every week, and we'll be happy to keep answering them.
Does anybody's name get dropped on here more?
No, exactly. And I think he loves it, too.
We talk about him more than any other player in the world. I guess he's been playing some decent golf lately. Boy can swing. He gets around it pretty good. So hopefully we get it with Brad at some point. Future Hamilton opened up, looking good. We're just waiting for the call, Brad. Just waiting for the call. We already told you. Say you call us and we'll call you right back. We'll do a one for one deal there. All right. Tip of the week, Scotty. Did you record one in the studio this week? Or are you doing it live on the podcast?
I'll throw it out on the pod here. I'll certainly, you know what I'll probably do in the next little while as I get a little bit more free time, getting out of the print season, as we call it, for the magazine. I'll certainly venture to put a few more video ones up there as I do a little bit more activity in the sim room or whatever. But you know what, just this week, working with some different players on some different aspects of their game. One of the things that I see for a lot of players is they don't have a lot of short game versatility. We see a lot of good players, even, you know, low handicaps, single handicaps, don't have a lot of versatility. And as a result of it, they're not really able to take advantage of things as much as possible. And, you know, this is when we're getting down to short strokes for players, when they really need to save shots. And if they only have a stock shot for pitching, for an example, they can't maximize their scoring. So players really need to learn how to hit their low shot, their stock shot, their high shots with their wedges for their commonly used pitch shots. And, you know, you want to learn how to vary the ball position to affect your dynamic loft. You want to learn how to affect the landing angle of how it's going to move, how the ball is going to land so that it stops, that you're not worried just about spin, in kind of a combination of how you're moving the club in relationship to your body, which is a lot of things people don't think about a lot of times. You know what, we're really trying to control the loft of the club. And you know what, you can get the club moving a little bit faster than what your body's moving, you'll tend to add more loft to the club and get the golf ball up in the air a little bit more. Whereas if we're moving our body and the club sort of stays behind us a little bit more, it takes off the loft a little bit more. So that's something that players need to experiment with. They really need to go to the practice range and chipping green, and even on the regular range itself. You don't necessarily need to be on a pitching range, because not everybody has a short game area that they can work on, but you can hit those shots on the driving range in your backyard. Learn the differences of how to control that loft so that you control the softness of your shots, so that you have a control over how you carry the golf ball, but how it rolls out as well. And if you do that, you focus on that carry distance, then you're able to gauge the rollout for each of the trajectories. You're going to be a lot better positioned for scoring, not only for taking advantage of maybe short pitches on par fives, but also for recovery, which is more important as well. As we know from playing, you don't always hit the green. So getting up and down can definitely make a big difference in your rounds. Big, big help there, and definitely work on that.
Yeah, I think the biggest mistake I see in the amateur game is when they get to a short shot, it's the same club every time. They pull out their lob wedge or their, you know, their gap wedge or whatever. Yeah. It's one club. And what I'd recommend people do, if say you have an hour to practice and you really need to practice your short game, go 3 different days, and each day grab one club and every do the same, put yourself in all the different positions, and it's only that club for the day, but switch the club. So one day go and do your lob wedge and say, practice all your different shots, you know, pick a pin. Okay, I'm going to practice getting up and down to that pin, but it's only at this club. The next day, hit from the exact same spots, but go grab your gap wedge and try that. That will actually get you way more feel, and you won't just be going out. The amount of times I see people, they get up short, it's an easy little bump and run, and they grab their lob wedge and they lob it, and you're either going to be short probably, or you're going to blade it, is like what I see a lot out of amateurs, where if you just even practice that shot with your gap wedge, is more like a putting stroke, but you're never going to do it unless you actually force yourself to do it at the practice range. Yeah. So yeah, I like that. It's something I used to do a long time ago. I started doing it a little bit more and just getting a little bit more versatile in the wedge selection I actually choose around the greens, not just grabbing that same one over and over and trying to hit all the different shots with that one.
Yeah, there's a lot more variety of shots. And, you know, we mentioned Gareth Wroblewski earlier in this podcast, and, you know, he talks about having over 100 different shots that players can choose from a short game perspective. So the ability to get familiar with all those techniques, practice it so that you have the skill to match with it, and then also have the ability to make the selection of the proper shot for the conditions is really, really important. And there's a lot more variance here than there is on, you know, standard shots when you're out on the golf course. This is why you need to practice it a lot more, and you have those different shots that you can choose from each time. And then really, I mean, if you're a low index player, maybe you're a 5, this is your pathway to get down to being a 2 or a 1. It's not by having a more perfect golf swing, because I can tell you your proximity to the hole is probably not going to vary by that much. And also the number of greens that you hit is probably not going to vary by that much. It could improve, but those short games tend to be the difference as far as the scoring.
Yeah, and I also think people should do that same thing I'm talking about, but like bunker shots. I was one that I used to only grab 2 clubs out of the bunker. It was either my lob wedge or my sand wedge, which is a 58 or a 54. And then like you get those long shots where it's like, I don't know how I'm going to get there. It's because I didn't even think to grab a gap wedge. I didn't think to grab a pitching wedge. They do the same thing. You just got to take that same shot. Stop trying to make it difficult. But the only way you're going to know that is by practicing with all of them. Force yourself to do it. If you actually go, like if you're worried, like I have a buddy that literally every time it's always the 58, I would literally say, go the range, only bring your 54 and then just go the short game. And then next time, like literally only bring your 50 or only bring your pitching wedge. And get creative. Like what it's going to do is it's actually going to teach your hands, which I remember I had a group lesson one time with Stan Utley, and he talked about that. It was like, your hands are the most important thing on the short game. If you got good hands, you're going to probably get up and down more. And the only way you're going to get good hands is by forcing yourself to use different clubs. Mm-hmm. So you actually can have good hands and actually get creative. And if you're just grabbing one club, you're probably hurting yourself. So I love this tip of the week. Gets me right back in this practice mode. I'm hoping the sun comes out today. It's rainy today. I need to get over. I need a practice today. I need some sort of confidence.
You didn't hit it that bad yesterday. I know you had some shots that were frustrating, but certainly by the later part of our round, you had it turned around, had a little bit more confidence. And I think the
gods wanted me to play like later. I don't know.
You need more time, more practice.
That's it. That's it. All right. Well, Scotty, great week. I'm looking forward to the Ryder Cup. How many Ryder Cups is this for you that like, you know, covering, let's say that. Has it been 20 years of 10 Ryder Cups covering more?
I think the first one that I was writing about and doing anything related to was probably 1999 at Brookline. So wow, that's a few.
Country club. Yeah. That's awesome. How many have you been to?
Oh, no, I haven't been to any.
You've never been to a Ryder Cup?
No, been to President's Cups, but no Ryder Cup. And that's a funny question. Actually, we should mention that before we get anywheres. We did have a curious question from someone who said to us, if someone is the organizer of the President's Cup in Montreal, should they be attending the Ryder Cup? Well, obviously, the person who asked that question, there's only one person that could be actually asking that question. So shout out to that question of the week to Ryan Hart.
Just to say.
It was a Ryder flex. Cup. It was pretty fun.
And I run the President's Cup, but I'm here. Exactly. Just want to let you all know that I'm here. And then what the guy that we ran into at Smiths Falls, Gord, he's off to the Ryder Cup, too. So, you know, just everyone's there. My buddy was at a practice round at the Ryder Cup.
I saw everyone's at the Ryder Cup
but us. Yeah. Oh, wow. I don't know.
It's okay.
another time, another day.
You know what the problem I think it is, and you know, we mentioned this a little bit yesterday, we talked about it, you know, going to President's Cups and experiencing that and seeing it, very difficult event to cover, just because there are a limited number of groups, there's so many fans that are out there. It is definitely one of those events that while you can be around and you can get the vibe of it, it's much easier to provide coverage and see what's going on sitting on your couch or sitting in the media room, and then maybe you run out of the media room when you go watch you know, Mike Weir take down Tiger, but that would be about it. Otherwise, yeah, it's a very difficult one, and for most people, you know, the best spot that they can watch this is going to be at home sitting on their couch.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what I'm going to be doing all weekend, with some football, some nachos, everything else in between, just enjoying the weekend, watching some golf. All right, let's leave it there, Scotty. Great episode. Thank you everyone for listening. We'll be back next week. We'll break down the Ryder Cup then, and who knows what else, because the season's kind of back started as well, with what tournament's next, who knows, maybe the Call of Duty championship after the Fortnite one. So we'll break that down, we'll preview the season ahead, maybe we'll do some, you know, hey, we gotta do some sort of, like, maybe it's some sort of fantasy draft for the year or something like that. That would be fun. A little pool going forward. Let's start that next week. Let's break down maybe some major awards, who we think was going to win certain tournaments going forward. I think what we'll do is that test next week again, where I ask you, hey, this tournament happened, who won it last year? God. That was a fun little game. So
fun / nightmare.
We got a lot going on next week, but we'll break it all down then. Thank you everyone for listening. We'll see you then.